There are brewery owners out there that have an added benefit of coming from another professional background. Someone who has an engineering, business, or marketing background, for instance, can have a leg up running their brewery. There's been many times that I wondered what it would be like to make a major career shift away from branding and design over to owning a brewery or a taproom. Over the last few years in Portland, I've had the pleasure of getting to know Ben Parsons of Bearlick Brewing. Ben fits this exact mold. He left a career as a professional designer to chase his dreams of making beer and opening a successful brewery. I wanted to dig into what life was like for Ben, and how his background in design has helped in running his brewery. Listen in as we discuss branding beer releases, opening a tap room in a food cart pod, and running a brewery as a designer, all on this episode of Branding Brews. Before we get started, I have a couple of exciting events coming up that I wanted to let you know about. The first thing is the California Craft Beer Summit in Long Beach, California. And that is happening September 12th through the 14th. I'm hosting a seminar called Freshly Wrapped, an inside look at label branding strategies. We worked with two breweries to develop a new can branding strategy, and we will be taking a deep dive kind of case study look at that process during the seminar. I will also be participating in a special display on the expo floor called Canland. The display will have numerous vendors from mobile canning, canning machines, can supplies, label printing, to myself with Craft Brew Creative. If you happen to be at the conference, I'd love an opportunity to meet you, and I'll be out on the expo floor. So take a look for the Canland display section, and I will be in there with the custom label booth. Also, keep your eyes and ears out, as we will be dropping two different podcast episodes in the next couple of weeks that are focused just on this freshly wrapped project. You can learn more and get tickets for that at californiacraftbeer.com. The second big thing is, I wanted to let you know about, is the November 1st and 2nd 2019 NanoCon. That's going to be in Vancouver, Washington, which is just right across the river from Portland, Oregon. Friday and Saturday are filled with over 30 seminars to round out your experience of the NanoCon event, which is hosted by BYO Magazine. I have two seminars there that I'll be speaking, and those are Branding Strategies for Startup Nanos and Brewery Branding Through Taproom Events. If you register by September 16th, you will save an additional $100 off the ticket price. So, for the BYO NanoCon event details, you can go to byo.com/NanoCon. Thanks for your time. Let's get into our interview with Ben.
So this is the first time I've done an actual recording in a tap room live, so we'll see how this works out. This can be fun. I'm here with Ben Parsons, who is the owner, founder, co-founder?
Co-founder, yeah.
Yeah, of Bearlick Brewing. And I thought this would be a cool episode because Ben is a designer and transitioned to owning a brewery. So Ben, why don't you kind of introduce yourself and go a little bit about background about who you are.
Yeah, so long before I was a designer, I was homebrewing, I guess sort of. I mean, if you go back far enough, I was really interested in design. I was in bands when I was a teenager, early 20s, and I was doing all the merchandise and album covers, things like that, not without any training whatsoever. So I always kind of had an interest in it. And then in 2006 or so, I started going to design school. Went to Portland State, almost graduated. I got a couple credits shy of, and I got a really awesome opportunity at a local agency called the Official Manufacturing Company. They've done Ace Hotel and Olympic Provisions back when it was called Olympic Provisions and things like that. So I got a really good opportunity to jump on there. All the while, since about 2004, I've been homebrewing. And the joke I make is about the time my design book collection was overpassed by my beer book collection.
Oh yeah, nice.
It was about the moment I really knew that, like, I've always been interested in small business and owning my own business. And that kind of put me into a path of opening a brewery and getting out of design. I worked agency for a couple of years, and I got into freelance for a couple of years, which really helped a lot when I was starting Bearlick.
Yeah.
I had a really flexible schedule, so I could really lean in on, you know, all the business plan writing and the performas and the, you know, raising money and all that stuff.
Yeah. And that probably also got you used to kind of running a business to a certain degree.
Sort of, yeah.
Freelance.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing about freelance that they don't teach you is, you know, your project manager, your sales account management, your designer, creative director, everything.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of, you know, really, really get your chops pretty sharp to be able to kind of sustain that.
Right. Yeah. So that's cool. So how was life as a designer, like full-time designer as your career and freelancer? Like what, you said your book collection got to a certain point where it was a more beer than design. Is that like, did you think that your like interests kind of started going more towards that, or was it just like, was it something about the full-time design career that maybe you weren't just like feeling as much?
I'm definitely not down for agency life.
Yeah.
You know, I had a few opportunities to get into larger agencies, and I kind of turned them down just because I didn't want to be that detached from the client. And that was one thing I learned a lot about at OMFG Co. was, you know, I was in the meetings with the clients talking about the design work that I was doing, having that, you know, really direct conduit, I really thrived on, you know, and yeah. The idea of kind of being the, you know, the guy in the other room with all the other lowly designers cranking away work just never appealed to me.
Yeah.
And I'd worked for really small businesses pretty much my entire adult life, so I have a real passion for small family-run businesses. So
yeah.
I think that was the big impetus of me kind of looking at what are my options. You know, at that time I didn't have any kids. I was able to kind of, you know, have a jumping off point. I can continue down this design path and make money and be really creative for someone else.
Right.
Or I can go down this other path and maybe be less successful, but have a lot more creative juice and kind of from start to finish. You know, I love the idea that I can concept a beer, whether it's the name story or a style of beer, and I get to carry it all the way through recipe development, everything. And I'm just hyper DIY that way.
Mm.
So I want to do everything myself.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's really thrived. You know, my creative energy has thrived in a small business setting.
Okay.
Is based on that, you know, and it's definitely trading one obsession for another because I, to me, they're so inextricably linked.
Yeah,
you know, to what I do every day. So Bearlick, mm-hmm. one happened to be Hopewell Brewing, which is an existing brewery that opened in Chicago a couple years ago.
Okay,
and the client decided to go with that, and Bearlick was kind of left on the table, and I kind of stuffed it in my back pocket and held on to it,
wow.
which became quite, you know, quite good when I needed a name for my brewery. And one thing that stood out to me in that particular name is it's super consonant heavy. It sounds like a name. It sounds, there's some stature to it.
It's got something like there.
Right, right. But it's kind of hard to pronounce when you first see it, Bearlick. So what happens is people don't know how to pronounce it. And I noticed quickly on going through concepting, even internally at the design agency, was people were like, I don't really like that. And then the next day they come back and go, I really like it. There's something about it. It's got some stickiness to it, you know? And then we kind of came up with the dumb joke of does a bear lick in the woods, and that's kind of, you know, how we kind of let people pronounce it through kind of, you know, more tagline kind of thing. But at that opportunity, it was amazing because I kind of was able to dig into that, and a lot of the legwork was done, and the client went in a completely different direction. I was able to grab that up, but that was pretty much it. That was like the first, you know, round of identity development for them. So when it came to actually going all in on Bearlick, I mean, it was a terrible experience because I was my own client.
Yeah, which is super hard.
I had plenty of constraints, but almost no constraints at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, and at that point I was working freelance. I wasn't in a creative space kind of, you know, showing this stuff. And to a certain degree, I had to kind of keep it under wraps because I wasn't able to, you know. So it was rough, and it still exists that way, working in a vacuum. You know, sometimes there's times where I work completely independently, and I just have to wing it and hope it sticks, you know. And other times I can get a little more, you know, more feedback to try to make it better, you know, see things that I didn't see, you know. And there's been a few, you know, kind of face palms over the years. Like,
oh, sure.
Well, you know, like.
Yeah.
So things I could have cut off in the past, but, you know.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, how long did you have to work on, like, the visual aesthetic of Bearlick before you opened your doors?
It was a couple of years.
Right?
Yeah, we took possession of the building January 1st, 2014. We opened it June 28th of that year. So
damn.
in brewery time, that's insanely fast. Yeah. Now it's up to 2.5 years, I hear. But I had plenty of time before that, but it was kind of, you know, blue sky, imaginary stuff. I didn't really get the chance to apply it until we really got into the build out and the, you know, other brand elements, things like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'm still tweaking and working on it today. I'm still right. turning knobs constantly, you know, and just changing stuff that sometimes I'm like, I should have done this 5 years ago.
Right.
And other things I'm like, I've learned as the brand has evolved.
Yeah.
And I'm such a representation of the brand, or the brand is such a representation of me, that I feel it's really fun that it just keeps evolving, because I keep evolving, especially in this business.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously a benefit of you being in branding and design background, you know. But I think
it's a blessing and a curse.
Right.
Means I do everything.
Okay. Yeah,
you know,
fair.
So there's no delegating, like even social media, photography, things like that. You know, like I still keep that really close.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you find? What did you kind of plan out when you opened up? I mean, obviously you've got this rad bear like on the wall here, and like the tap room is it's branded very well. The colors, mm-hmm. you know, it's when you walk in, it's very bear like, you know,
right.
like, did it kind of come as like, did you have to kind of execute as you went along? You're like, oh, we've got this wall, and like, man, the bear like logo would look rad. How do we fit it on there?
And, right. And I mean, a lot of happy accidents. The thing about, you know, when you get into a build out is you're working with zoning and permitting issues. So in our feature wall, we call it, it's bumped out. There's a section in the center that's bumped out, you know, two feet or so.
Yeah.
And we had to eat up square footage in here.
Okay.
We had to take up space.
Interesting.
Because of the zoning issues. We went from a bagel shop to a restaurant, as it were. So we had to actually bump the wall out a bit to eat up square footage. So there's nothing behind that. And because of that, that gave me the idea to make that more of a focus and then break it up as it is. So a lot of it's just, you know, again, in any design, you work against the constraints and try to make the best you can out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true of the budget and everything. So it was pretty scrappy. The big intention here was I wanted to set us kind of a step away from the typical Portland beer thing. You know, this 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
Totally different industry then. You
yeah.
know, there
it's
wasn't.
Crazy to say that.
Like, we were bright and simple and sparse, and, you know, people would come in and, you know, say it's just so clean, and they meant like sterile. Like,
yeah.
And so, in some regards, and I didn't want it to be kind of manufactured, like lived in, you know, I didn't want to put a bunch of old stuff up like we've been here 20 years. I wanted to earn it. So, a lot of it now, it's like starting to feel worn in, you know, so it's an old building, of course. But we wanted to start with a super clean slate with the intention of kind of earning the age on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, the tables and stuff, like, they look like they could be, like, old, and the chairs, like, school tables or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Like, is that...
That was somewhat deliberate. A lot of it, again, was budget. I was able to find American-made industrial furniture for, like, a really good price.
That's awesome.
And then I found these colorways... And what's funny is I found a gray stool and a blue stool, and that inspired the actual brand colors of Bearlick, because I'm like, we should try to match that to that.
Wow.
Things
yeah.
like that. So again, a lot of it just comes with the elements that happen as you're evolving through the build out.
Yeah.
And then you just appropriate as you best you can.
Yeah. yeah. That's cool.
But on top of that, education is a huge part of our brand. Like, we, you know, on our front of house hospitality, education, education, education. So it's kind of funny when I hear people say it feels like a schoolroom in here.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I don't know if it was, you know, some subconscious thing coming together.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's cool. Well, I think it's nice. And like you said, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, that was kind of a different thing. And I think there are a number of more breweries coming out that are less of like the, you know, like iron pipes and
right.
Edison bulbs and
right.
old worn couches or whatever, you
right.
know.
Or just a warehouse with some furniture.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. You're walking in a warehouse. Yeah. Okay, cool. So yeah, I think that's interesting. I'm trying to, in my mind, as a designer who doesn't own a brewery, mm-hmm. like, that works with a lot of brewery clients that are starting up, you know, it's like, how could I be more beneficial? It's like, you kind of have to be there along with them on that process, like you said, during the build out,
mm-hmm.
or you can't, and you just like have to ideally prepare them with the best branding possible that they
right.
can take to like an interior designer, they can use that
right.
or whatever.
And that's where, you know, in my agency days, that was kind of the biggest hang up, is about the time I think the client needed the most creative help. is the execution, yeah. is the time you're completely detaching you're yourself from it, you know? Yeah. And you're like, part of you like, well, you're not going to do it right, but it's theirs, so you can't really say it like that. But I mean, coming, you know, from you building most of it, at least the heart of it, you know, you have a lot of connection to it. Mm-hmm. And at that point is when they need to actually apply their brand, and that's when they need more help than probably before, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there is something to be said about, you know, like, getting in with the client long term. It's one thing to just crank out a logo or identity set and walk away, but I think you do them a disservice if you're not part of that bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what brands are, is something you build over time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's another thing to say too, if you're like a new brewery opening up, is to make sure that you think of your branding like colors and your story or your concept of the brand and everything, like at every touch point. So you make sure that whoever you're working with, it might be an interior designer or like an architect that like can be willing to understand that,
right.
or see like a brand identity or a brand manual or whatever, and be able to like take that and build that out too.
Right. And one thing I learned at official manufacturing company is the idea of Easter eggs. You know, like an old website, you'd have the Easter egg or
like a hidden thing.
Or a hidden thing or something that you don't want anyone to notice right away. You want it to just blend in, but when someone does, it's like a really magical experience for them. So right in front of where you enter our brewery, there's a big yellow line with letters in it, not unlike any industrial floor has, right? And it says, no beer beyond this point.
Yeah.
K-N-O-W. And it's funny because early on, you get people and they're walking back there and they look down and they see that and then they jump back over the line with their beer.
Yeah.
And then ding, 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 you know, the gears turn and then the light bulb goes on and they kind of crack a smile and then carry on. Like it's little treasures like that that I just absolutely love.
That's great. So now that you've been running Bear Lake for 5 years, and congratulations again for your anniversary.
Thank you.
That's pretty rad. How has your like design background played a role in your position of running the brewery? And like, was it anything that you thought it would be like during your planning stages?
The joke I always make is by the time I had any idea what I was getting myself into opening a brewery, it was too late to turn back.
Yeah.
So I mean, every day is a new experience. And I think that's the fun and challenge and absolute headache and stress, you know, levels of being a business owner, is at the end of the day, you've got to come up with the winning thing, right? You know, and it's your fault if it doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
Which is, it can be really challenging, but at the same time, I think, to go back to design, I think it's always about problem solving and constraints, and that's like I've always thrived creatively with constraints, and when the stakes are kind of high, like that's, I don't know when I
pressure.
Just something the pressure is good for you. You know, Adam Garcia, like. I think all of those things like get me to, I don't know if I get the most clear head or just necessity, I can't stew on it anymore.
You have to
do it in an hour. I got to get it done in an hour.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there's something to be said about creative process, and I think the more constraints you have, I think the better designer you can be. You know, and in school it's interesting because, you know, it's wide open and you get your blue sky projects and your imaginary clients, right?
Yeah.
And not a single imaginary client is going to come to you after you, you know, lay your heart on the table with their big, you know, round one deck. And they're like, yeah, I don't really like purple.
Yeah.
And the entire thing just goes to hell, right?
Yeah.
So I think part of it is I'm in charge of all that. You know, I'm responsible for all that. But part of it is that it still keeps interesting because we're doing new stuff all the time, you know. And that's the industry right now. You know, we did 23 different packaged beers last year. We're going to do probably 36 different packaged beers this year, if not more. You know, and it's just that churn and burn is the market right now, which keeps it super interesting and super stressful.
Yeah.
Because there's times where we make a beer, and it's kind of filling a slot in terms of what we're trying to sell. Just to say a one-off IPA. It's in the tank before it has a name, and I've got a concept of name, concept of label. We have some templating, so sometimes that's pretty straightforward. And then by the time, you know, 2 weeks later goes, we're like putting that beer in a can.
You know?
So I think that has kept my chops up. So I do exercises. I'll come in, you know, and I know I have to get this design done by lunch today.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought about it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't get a label order in tomorrow, they're not going to show up in time.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, it's still kind of, you know, trial by fire, which I think a lot of agencies is, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, it's good exercises for me to do that, to kind of keep me on my toes, you know? And it always works out somehow, some way. Like,
yeah,
knock on wood.
Right. So do you like try to calendar in like bookmark slots to do design work or?
Yeah, that's to the best of my abilities, you know. But there's times where I can't force an idea, you know.
Yeah,
if a name, creativity. If I'm like, I think that's like 90% there, but it's not quite there. Then I'm not going to spend the time designing a label if I'm not 100% sure that's the name or the direction we want to go from a from a brand story perspective on that particular beer. And a lot of it is coming up with an idea or a brand and then building a beer to it. I mean, that's, I think, the kind of chicken or the egg kind of thing. Because I get the ability to do that a lot.
Yeah.
I'll just come up with an idea. I think that would be a really good, cool-looking can or a good concept. What kind of beer would go with that?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I do here is, like, I do a lot of the recipe development, too. So it's really awesome to kind of bring that creative part into the brand creation part.
Okay. That seems fun to be able to do the design and like concepting of a beer and then build a beer around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, what kind of tells that story more, you know?
Like
your best.
Absolutely. So like what was your idea, or like did it, your perceptions of what your role would be here when you started it being a designer, how has that different from when like now? Like, I mean, obviously I'm sure you knew that you were going to be running a business, but like, did you think that like, the slot of you that's a designer, did it fit what you thought it would be like when your business got rolling and years into it?
I think creatively it's about there, you know, the idea of, I think it's a lot faster moving. The industry is, you know, kind of kicked into high gear in the last couple of years, so that's forced a lot of extra work just based on the turn and burn of our, you know, rotating beers all the time. So I thought I'd brew a lot more beer. So, when, you know, because I came from a brewing background as well. So for the first 2 years, I was brewing, 50% of the beer, 40% of the beer. And now, I mean, I haven't brewed in like a year and a half, you know. So getting that far detached from that process is kind of a bummer, you know, especially when I'm upstairs making graphics for Facebook. You know, just like, I look at myself, you know, in the reflection on my screen. I'm like, why am I not stirring a mash paddle right now? But it is what it is, you know, and that's like, you know, because I'm kind of creative director and pushing that bigger creative part of the brand, it's my purgatory, you know. It's like, same regard, there's a lot of other stuff going on. We self-distribute, which is unusual for a lot of breweries, so we manage a sales team and a delivery and distribution wing that, you know, I manage that as well. So there's a lot more on my plate now, so at times the creative part gets kicked to the curb because I have really important things to do.
Yeah.
Not to say that, you know, the creative component isn't important, but there's times where I can half-ass a label and just get it out the door if I have to pay taxes to the federal government, you know, because they're a lot less forgiving than the printer.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So you and I did an event together a little over a year ago called Rough Drafts, and I had talked about it on the show back then, but it was a really fun concept, and I'm stoked you were part of it, where we had designers paired with brewers and come up with their own beer, the collaboration between that, and then the designer, there was no name for the beer, and at the event, the designer, the audience submitted names, and then they picked one, and then the designer designed a label for that beer at the event live in front of the audience. What was that kind of like for you, seeing that like unfold, I guess maybe for one, and then working with a designer and not having like you being the designer, like, and then I guess what was that like for you?
Well, that was, I would say, my first therapy session of being able to let go a little bit,
you know,
just because I am a control freak and my own brand and all that stuff. One thing I'm not good at is something that Kyle is really good at, like illustration and those kind of more loose textural things that he's just really good at. So I was stoked to see that, you know, I was paired with him, and I'd kind of known his work a little bit, thanks to Instagram. And but beyond that, it was, my favorite part about that was just watching someone else interpret our brand, you know, because I think that's super invaluable. It was really hard to kind of let anything creative go. Yeah, it's challenging, you know?
Yeah.
But it was the first therapy session of getting over myself, I guess, in that regard. Because at some point, I can't do everything.
Yeah.
You know, so right now we're trying to transition, how do I kind of, you know, put off production work on someone else or things like that? Is that a reality we have to live in right now? So it's like, it is what it is. One thing I really liked about that event, and this is my favorite part about kind of being in both the design world and the beer world, is I can pivot out of the one I don't want to be.
Okay.
So in this case,
right.
I would be terrified sitting behind a computer in a room full of people watching my creative process.
Like 120 people watching you design.
Right. And so I was so excited I could just step back into the shadows. And, oh, I'm just the beer guy.
Yeah, just the beer.
Yeah, yeah. And vice versa. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I still thought it would have been super funny if people were, like, tagged in and, like, took over some of this, but that was probably going to be, like, terrifying, the idea of that. So have you explored the idea of hiring any other designers or artists to do anything for you? Like, is that, since that's happened and you saw someone else do it, or just even in general, like, some different styles or anything like that, have you explored that?
Yeah, and we've worked with a buddy of mine, Brett Stenson, awesome.
Yeah, Brett's rad.
Yeah, illustrator, designer. Joel Bean Friends.
Yeah.
Their studio's like three blocks away.
They're
friends of ours. So actually the only label that I didn't design was the one that Brett designed for us.
Oh, that's cool.
Was our Punk Rock Time.
Okay.
Yeah, IPA. And I love it. It's like, you know, that was the one time, and him and I kind of collaborated on it. Like I knew our structure and what, you know, kind of the details of our templating and our constraints and the printing process and kind of showing metallic through and all kind of other printing details. And he knows our brand so well because he comes in and drinks beer all the time.
Yeah.
So it was awesome. Like that was another time I let go. But you know, as far as the ownership of the brand, but he knocked it out of the park. You know, and it's like hands down my favorite label that's happened. You know?
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think sometimes working with somebody else too, like it could be scary, but then it could also be enlightening, mm-hmm. but like you're like, wow, holy, the result that came out was not something you probably would have ever thought, or just so actually that kind of leads me to another question, is that like the explosion of like can releases, you know, one-off releases is huge, especially if you're selling them out of your tap room. Do you have any core beers, or is that anything that you've looked at developing over time?
Yeah, they've kind of, I mean, there's one beer that we continue to make now that we made when we opened. That was our Eastside Pilsner.
Okay.
I would much prefer to have that packed in a can, because I absolutely love Pilsner. We've been making Pilsner for a long time, and I just love that beer style. Like, that's my go-to. When we first made Dad Beer, the brand got some traction.
Yeah.
And for us at the time, we self-distribute, so we have to have a really broad portfolio. So when we go out to talk to Market of Choice and New Seasons, you know, distributors can go in there and say, we got all these brands with all these styles, right? So they have a phone book of possibilities. We have to be very strategic about what we go in there as our set list. So we kind of have to fill slots.
Yeah.
So, Dad Beer had done remarkably well. I think it's a great brand. I think it got really good traction in a lot of good ways.
Yeah.
So that kind of superseded Eastside.
Okay.
So Eastside we package now and again, but it's definitely one of those choices you make from a brand standpoint. And so typically, and then we have Punk Rock Time IPA, but we've been making that for just over a year. You know, we changed our flagship IPA three times.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you
flagship,
know, air quotes, yeah, lots of air quotes. But what I'm finding out is the market kind of swung from flagship core with some mix of seasonals to the occasional one-off to nothing but one-off beers, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like the pendulum's coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think what I'm seeing is traction starting to gain in what, quote unquote, our core brands, Dad Beer and Punk Rock Time. Those are slowly building over time.
Okay, that's good.
And had we thrown a beer out as a one-off, and it's, you know, doing what it's doing today, now we would consider, you know, like maybe this brand has legs.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we run our business is, you know, we throw an idea out there. Maybe a brand's really good. The packaging is really good. It resonated. But it's the first time we made the beer, so maybe it wasn't a home run as far as the recipe goes. Or vice versa. Maybe it's an awesome beer.
Yeah.
And just for whatever reason, the brand didn't stick.
Yeah.
So we're able to kind of pick and choose. And then, you know, 6-8 months later, we can rethink that.
Yeah.
And try to push that into rotation, you know. And so right now we're pretty heavy on, we make Dad Beer and Punk Rock Time IPA year-round. We do quarterly hazy beers, hazy IPAs, and those kind of are just ever-evolving. Then we do quarterly double hazy releases. And then we just kind of feather in small stuff. So we have an oak fermented saison we call Milo. We're going to do a breaded version of that, which I'm really excited
good,
about.
Really good.
Yeah. And just little stuff. And that's, you know, again, we're doing probably 36 different packaged beers this year. So you're looking at 3-ish a month.
Yeah.
You know?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Do the retailers that you put out in your can packaged beers, do they preferring to see those like one-off coming through in a constant rotation?
Not at first.
Yeah.
At first, everyone was coming in being like, you know, oh, sorry, we're out of that beer, but we have this new beer we made, and they're pulling their hair out.
Yeah.
And then they realized the reason the breweries were doing that is because that's what the consumer wanted, and I think it caught up from kind of, you know, brewery taproom scene to the grocery scene.
Yeah.
And they started really kind of embracing that. So, you know, 3 years ago, it was hard to get anything that wasn't pretty consistently produced in, let's say, new seasons or market choice. And now, I mean, we have 6 to 8 facings in a lot of stores because we have so many different stuff.
You know? Yeah.
And what used to be the 22-ounce bottle selection is now the 16-ounce single can selection. You know, so there's been a big evolution in format and the perception of that with the consumer. And the second we put beer in cans, was the first time we ever pre-sold an entire batch of beer before it was even packaged.
Wow.
And so that's a testament. And it's kind of held true since then. We've doubled our packaging output over the last 12 months.
Okay.
Yeah, incrementally. It's just more and more. Every month we just stack on a little more.
Yeah.
And it's working. And now, over time, what used to be really hard to try to get, you know, 2 flagships in, now we have 2 flagships and 4 to 6 one-off seasonal things.
Yeah.
So I think over time it's been... It's like we almost had to teach the grocery stores what the beer scene was happening, you know? And they're a lot more constrained with inventory and all that stuff. So, like, that's operational stuff that we don't have to deal with. But they've slowly been able to kind of adapt to that to take advantage of it because that's really what the consumer wants right now.
Yeah.
Who knows what they want tomorrow.
But. Yeah. Well, Portland, obviously, is a completely different market I mean, just in a number of ways, obviously, mm-hmm. but the sense that the consumers are so educated in the craft beer. So I imagine that, like, now when I go into new seasons for those people out there that are not in Oregon and Portland, it's a supermarket out here that's kind of a nice, kind of high-end supermarket. But, yeah, their beer section now is almost half just single 16-ounce cans. Right. So I'm used to going in there now and seeing these rotational beers that are just, you know. And so I'm sure, the consumer, I think, now knows that, like you said, they would get angry when it was out, but mm-hmm. I think people now know that, oh yeah, that was just that one release.
Right.
Helps kind of hype sales for you too. Totally. So I'm kind of curious how you design, develop, or try to hype up these beer releases mm-hmm. for yourself. Like, is that part of the design process? I mean, obviously you come up with a theme and,
It kind of depends on the beer and kind of depends on where I think it will do well in the market, whether it's specialty bottle shops, if it's, you know, if it's our tap rooms, if it's grocery, like kind of where is it checking most boxes in terms of where it's going to sell? And that kind of guides how it's branded. I mean, we have a second location, the Barley Pod, Food Cart Pod, total neighborhood joint, you know, like it's so dense with neighborhood. We do a beer called Rose City Park Pale. That's the name of the neighborhood up there, Rose City Park. And we do it just for them. You know, and they love it. And when it's gone, they complain. And when it's back, you know, they slowly chip away with it, you know, which is awesome. But then that's not necessarily the same, you know, kind of strategy for a hazy IPA, you know. And one concern, you know, we do an oak-aged saison. I absolutely love the beer called Milo. 100% oak fermented. Saison is a really awesome beer style, and it's always had an uphill battle trying to sell.
I love it.
And it used to be, historically, it was a, you know, it was a working class beer. You know, you're a farm worker drinking Saison mm-hmm. in, you know, Belgium, France, mm-hmm. you know, quenching your thirst and getting your calories while you're, you know, busting ass in the fields.
Working man's beer.
Right. And then because it's, you know, kind of the trajectory of the American beer market, imported beers got really special, right? There was domestic kind of, you know, water beers, and then there was, like, imports. And then Saison somehow got in this corking cage, like, it's this, you know, it's like this big experience. You bring 3 of your best friends in the world over, you lock the door, and you pop open a bottle of 5% Saison.
Lock the door.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a super experiential thing.
Yeah.
And so that's the last thing I wanted to do. If we have a snowball chance in hell to sell a Saison.
Yeah.
It's got to be super approachable. So we wanted to put it in a can, wanted to have the brand be like super bright, super friendly, somewhere feminine, a little bit masculine, cute, you know, kind of play off that, like this cute little beer thing, you know? And it's done quite well. And I think in that particular beer, we were kind of up against a beer that could have failed miserably based on just how the history of that style is done in the market in that format. And I liked it, and it did really well. It's been doing really well. It's been building over time, which I'm really excited about, because I think a lot of that is the way it was packaged was very intentional to try to get it over the hump and get it in more people's hands.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think it's a case-by-case basis, you know?
Yeah.
Like hazy IPAs, you can be a little more playful. There's like a, you know, scene for that. You can kind of just be more playful and aggressive at most.
I think I've seen it, at least you do a couple, few, but like kind of release events at the tap room.
Sure. Yeah.
How often do you like, and again, it's just case-by-case basis where you're like, hey, I think this would be a great one to throw some kind of like themed event or idea or, you know.
Right.
For this release, like how often is that, just case by case again?
It is. It kind of depends on the beer. If you know, if we're doing a 50 case run and I want it to stick around the tap room, I think it's, you know, it's a good to add to our portfolio or the set we're building in our own reach in cooler, like Milo Saison. I want it to stick around for a while, so I want it to be, you know, I want it to slowly catch on.
You don't want to
if it's
blast
gone,
through it.
Right? If it's gone in a week, you know, that's great for business. That's bad for brand building.
Yeah.
You know? There's a chance you get the FOMO thing happening, you know, if like depending on the beer, but it has to be kind of culturally appropriate or subculturally appropriate for that particular beer style.
Yeah.
So a lot of it depends on that. So smaller releases like that, maybe we'll make a little less noise. Beers we know are going to sell themselves.
Yeah.
We maybe make a little less noise. But brands we think have legs, we'll put a lot more attention in. And a lot of it has to do with my time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I just don't have time to kind of come up with a bigger marketing push, or you know, and other times I make the time because I think it's that important.
So I did want to talk a little bit about the Barley Pod, because I think it's like it's genius, and I'm sure you're probably not the first, but maybe.
I doubt it. Yeah, maybe. No good ideas originally.
Right. Well, no, I heard somebody else recently on the Good Beer Hunting podcast talking about the same concept, which. When he explained it, which I experienced it when I went to the Barley Pod. So the Barley Pod is you own the land, right? It's a food cart pod.
Yeah, it's a food cart pod. It's a freestanding tap room. So it's about 1,000 square feet tap room, right dead center in the middle of this 10,000 square foot lot. And so it's totally wrapped in 10 food carts, a big outdoor beer garden, heated tent for, you know, year round seating, 200 seats outside, another 50 inside.
Yeah. Yeah, so essentially the idea, like when I was hearing it again, as I mentioned on this podcast, the gentleman was just like explaining, and it clicked in my head, like, you are the source of beverage or beer. I mean, obviously you could probably grab like a Coke or whatever for this, but for beer, and so you got all these food carts, so people was like, it's this traction of all these different things that they can eat, and then, yeah, why not go sit in a cool tap room, like both aesthetically and probably cool, like in the summer, like physically. You're the go-to beer, and you've got this brewery here, so you can deliver your beer out there. How did that kind of come about? Like, was it something that fell in your lap, or was it something you kind of strategized, or both?
A little bit of both, yeah. We, you know, really talked about what our next move was. We were self-distributing, we were growing. There's only so much beer we can sell ourselves. You know, we can't really kind of double our production and sell twice as much. It just takes more time than that. So we're kind of figuring out, okay, as we increase production, we get more tanks in the building, how do we sell more beer? And, you know, our best margins are over the counter, so that's obviously good for business. Our best experience is our front of house, you know, strategy is service, and education, and, like, we have really good front of house staff. It was leveraging what we're really good at, you know? And so the next big step is, do we open another tap room? Okay, like what's that concept? Do we just plunk that down in the Pearl where there's a lot of density? Or do you try to put it in a neighborhood and try to build a neighborhood spot? And the gorilla in the room was always food. You know, we don't have food here. We have bar snacks. And that's always been kind of it's always attracted, I think, from our potential. But we really want to focus on beer here, and we don't know how to run restaurants. So we're not in a position to, like, hire a GM that, you know, can...
Yeah.
We just didn't have the budget for it. So in this concept, we kind of thought about getting a cart, a beer cart, and plunking it in a food cart pod. We're like, that's low buy-in. We can kind of test a neighborhood or a market and sell some beer over the bar and make some money. It never really fit well with the brand, but we're like, okay, we're going to go down. We're going to explore this option and see what happens.
Yeah.
Started talking to, you know, networking, talking to people, and this kind of fell in our lap. I got connected with the owners of the property, so we don't own the property, and they were wanting to have an anchor tenant be a bar and have a food cart pod, and I'm like, that's us.
Yeah, that's us. Yeah.
And it totally fell in our lap pretty shortly after we kind of started talking to people. This would have been, man, like March of 2017. So it was about a year and a half we waited, and then so I drove by the property. The neighborhood's awesome. You just drive through and you're like, this is a neighborhood. It's a
nice neighborhood.
It was a beer desert, you know?
Yeah. And
it's hard to say in Portland, right?
Yeah. But like a beer desert's like 20 blocks
right.
or something.
And that's about what it is, but it's the right beer desert. There was a ton of people and a ton of families and super dense neighborhood. A lot of parks and baseball fields. Like, it just has this community vibe. Like, you know, if people didn't have to leave their neighborhood right there, if there was other things, you know, all the amenities, they never would.
Never would, yeah.
And so it just is always felt right. And so we definitely got a bunch of false starts with it over the year and a half we were waiting. We almost pulled the plug several times.
Wow.
It was just delayed in permitting and zoning and all kinds of big city stuff. But we just kept coming back. We have to hold on. So once we opened, it's been, been going gangbusters since the day we opened.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it checked all the boxes on what we were capable of doing. We, again, were able to skirt out or, you know, avoid having to do food.
Yeah.
And that's not our expertise. I think it gave a really unique experience to the neighborhood. And it's, I mean, what's more Portland than food carts and, you know, independent beer? So it's like, put those two together and it's been awesome. It's been challenging because we are, you know, 11 businesses on a 10,000 square foot lot that have to coexist together. Yeah. So there's been challenges with that.
Yeah. You know? And are you leasing the?
We are the anchor tenant. The owner of the property actually manages all the food carts.
Oh.
So we basically just show up and you know, pour the beer and bust ass with good customer service and hospitality.
Okay. So that works out nice.
Yeah.
I like that idea better than, you know, if you're a brewery that has like rotating carts, you know, because you always have to post like, oh, on a Facebook or an Instagram, like, oh, on an Instagram story, today is a Taco Tuesday and it's this truck, or you know, like, and so as a customer, you always have to like figure out, oh, what food cart's there today, you know, and so like, I like the idea of having just a food cart pod where you've got all these trucks around you.
Everybody's happy, you know. You go up, you got vegan and vegetarian, all the way to, you know, southern fried chicken, all the way to, you know, Chinese street food.
Yeah,
kids are happy. Grandma's happy, mom and dad are happy, you know? And that's awesome. It's like, you know, it's like, we're actually talking about it in our sales meeting this morning, is how we would ever approach food on our own is like, we don't want to be the option that is just so-so, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't want someone to come in here and we're kind of half-assing our food program just to have food. And someone's like, well, I'm just going to leave and go somewhere where I actually want to eat.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that gives the value to this idea is like, anyone can go there and find something of value in all of those 10 carts.
Yeah.
And they come in and maybe they don't buy a beer.
Mm. Okay.
That's fine.
Hopefully they'll come back and then
I mean, that's the shared space there, you know? So not everyone's going to buy food. They're just going to have a beer. And sometimes people are going to have food and not have a beer. And that's, again, you're building a place or a hub of community. And I think that's where success has happened.
And I think Portland's interesting in the food aspect, like you're just saying, because if you're not, people aren't familiar with Portland, Portland, Oregon, is that if you serve alcohol, you also have to have food in some manner.
Not necessarily.
Well, there's some caveats, right? But generally speaking, like, you know, everywhere you go that has alcohol, you generally has food, or is like you're able to bring food. But yeah,
you're actually
explain that.
You're actually talking to the right guy because I worked. I'm on the Oregon Brewers Guild Board of Directors.
Oh, nice.
And in 2016, I worked really hard with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to actually create what's called a minor posting. It's the sign that says you have to be this age to be in this area.
Okay.
And we created a new minor posting specific to brewery tap rooms, tasting rooms that didn't have food. So we can actually allow minors in here. That was very important to me. I had, when opening, by the time we opened, I had one son, now I have two kids. And so that's super important to me. So that's, I'm just going to toot my own horn. Like that was like, yeah. We worked really hard to get that because beer isn't just about, you know, like blocking off. It's cultural.
Yeah.
So it has to be, you know, people have to be able to have a healthy experience with alcohol if they're ever going to have a healthy experience with alcohol.
Yeah.
So that was really important. But generally speaking, yes, you have to have food. And that has always been a challenge, you know, because we'd get people, you know, a new mom, first time out, her and her husband would try to come in here and have a beer. She's like, I haven't had a beer in, you know, 9 months. And we can't let them in.
Yeah.
Because they have a newborn on their shoulder that, right, it was just antiquated. So we were able to change that, which is really awesome. I'm really proud of that. And hopefully that will kind of spread into other people because it's still, there's even people at the OLCC that don't really know how that works.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's crazy. So yeah, but I mean, for those that like have to like incorporate the food aspect, like you're saying, you don't want to do food bad because then, you know, so that's a whole other thing.
It's a balance. Do you want the food to outshine the beer or the beer to outshine the food?
Yeah.
There's no right answer to that.
Like, yeah, exactly. Cool. So I'm kind of curious to hear like what brewery brands are inspiring you right now?
I mean, I think, you know, anything that's super honest, I think Freem's done a really good job with that.
Yeah.
You know, knowing Josh a little bit. And just the fact that he's using his family name on it, I think that's something that is lost in a lot of brands is the people behind it. You know, and that's, I'd say we're guilty of that. Like, Bearlick, like, people ask me if that's my name. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know, I kind of have to explain.
Family heritage or something.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? They expect me to be some, I don't know, like enormous Englishman or something.
Yeah.
Name like that. But, I think Freem does it really well. I think locally they do really well. I don't know, there's so many brands that do, I would say any brand that's super exemplary of themselves. Because I think there's a lot of brands in the beer world that just, I think they're gimmicky, or they're simple, or they're just not that considered, or they're just a dumb name. I come across them all the time on Instagram. Like, you put that on the side of a building?
Yeah, you decided to name your brewery that?
Yeah. Right. So I think, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at my Instagram.
Yeah, just look at my Instagram.
Yeah. I think there's a design agency out of Seattle called Blind Tiger.
Yeah.
It does some really awesome stuff. I kind of follow all the stuff they do. And
a
friend of mine, Harvey, works up there and doing awesome stuff. So I think that's kind of where I tend to find it, is more on the designer side.
Yeah.
And then I find new breweries I've never heard of.
Yeah, you know, you just kind
of probably never drink their beer because they're somewhere I never go.
Yeah.
I think anything that's doing, I think Old Town has done really well with their brand. I think Jordan has done a great job with that. I think Ex Novo has done great.
Yeah.
Jeremy over there. I don't know. For me, it's like, do I know them? Like, you know, do I know the people making the beer? Do
that
they
helps.
Care?
Yeah.
Do I know the people managing the brand, building the brand? Do they care? And I think that's, to me, like, maybe I'm biased in that way. I don't know. Like,
yeah. Well, it's when I just did the last episode I put out, or recent episode, was I've been working with this brewery for a year, Blaker Brewing, and there's so much of the brand that gets built from the employees, you know, from the experience there. I mentioned, like, in that interview that, like, any brewery that I've worked with, like, you, like, I've made a connection with, or, like, Hopworks, or, like, whoever, like, that I've worked with on an event, or like in any way, like I've been kind of invited a little bit inside of, you know, a little bit, like I'm now an evangelist for that brand,
right.
So the same thing I think with customers too, that come in and get that really warm, inviting, welcome, friendly feeling. So like for you, like you're just mentioning, it's probably, you know, the kind of the inside, you know.
Right. And like, I'll say, you know, in that case, I live up in Woodstock and Double Mountain is right there. And I love that place. I'm not totally in love with their brand, but their brand doesn't need to be anything other than exactly what it is,
because
they're killing it. You go in there, you feel great, the people are awesome, the beer's good, the food's good. And so I think it kind of depends on what people are trying to do with their brand.
Yeah.
There's one thing to be said that you want to be a neighborhood joint, and you know, you don't need to, you know, put out 25 different beers a year in cans and, you know, like hazy IPA, this and that. And sometimes, you know, like, I love Von Ebert. Like, those guys are making phenomenal beer all across the board. I think the brand's solid. But they're also really young. So I don't even know really what their brain is going to evolve to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So again, I think it goes back to that bigger experiential thing that takes time, so.
Yeah. Is that something you consider, like, I'm sure you do, obviously, when you're in your employees and your in your culture and your tap room, but is that something you consider, like, during, like, your events and stuff like that, I imagine?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it. And again, it goes back to, you know, one thing I learned in design school and just getting into small agency is I would much rather have a brand that's more relevant in 10 years than is like the bee's knees now.
Yeah.
Like, I just sounded really old.
Yeah, I did say bee's knees.
What have I done?
Since sliced bread.
They can do that? But it's super important to me that we earn our brand as opposed to come out swinging and it's slick and it's polished and kind of fabricated, you know, because I think it's easy to throw money at a brand and it can seem really genuine until the patina starts to wear in, you know? And I think it's true also that you can start with a kind of, you know, meager brand and build it over time as you evolve your business and your clientele and your relationships and your knowledge of what the hell you're doing, you know? So I think I would much rather, and again, we evolve every day. Like I'm turning the knobs every single day. On this brand, you know. So,
sweet. This whole time, this is really a podcast interview, but it's more like research for me for when I open my brewery as a designer. So I just want to let you know that you're going down, buddy.
You won't listen
there. Stole all your secrets. All right, thanks for that. No, but I know I'm sure. That some of our listeners out there are designers, marketing, you know, are in the creative field, and maybe not even, you know, be in the beer, working in beer right now in the beer market. But what kind of advice would you have for any other designers or creative folks out there that are thinking of opening a brewery where you were before? Like, do you have any advice that would be you can give those folks?
Go for it.
Go for
it. You only live once, right? But don't mess it up. You know, like, have really good beer. Like, don't get so bogged down in your brand and keeping it slick that you spend all your money on, you know, like, I don't know, really expensive glassware as opposed to, you know, something that would benefit the quality of the beer. Because I think at the end of the day, no matter how good or bad the brand is, the beer is what really, when it's naked in the glass, you know, you're at a bar and your logo's not all over it, your staff isn't hovering around it, it's got to speak for itself.
Yeah.
So start with the beer. Yeah. And you have plenty of time to worry about the brand.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, right, it evolves. Yeah. You know, and it's like, it's, I think it's, just got to roll with it. I think you can't get wrapped up in the idea that, like, when you open the doors, that was what my brand is.
Right.
You know, like, you can always tweak things.
Right.
I don't think it's I think it's good to do that because, like, better to evolve your brand than, like, to rebrand in, like, 5-8 years.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's much easier to say, okay, I'm just going to change the color and, you know, change it up again.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's what the industry is kind of begging for now, is they want new stuff all the time. So if you can kind of consistently build brand equity through evolution, I think that you, in theory, should never be stagnant, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time, Ben.
Awesome. Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks for hanging out.